Hello and welcome to episode 13 of the HMEB podcast. I'm your host, David Cuff, the executive editor of HME Business Magazine, your source for news, trends, and insights into the home medical equipment industry. This episode covers some great stuff. First, we'll talk to an expert about the opportunities in Medicare and Medicaid managed care plans, and a special learning event where you can learn more about how to negotiate managed care contracts. Then, we'll learn about a new service that helps providers manage their fleet of equipment that's out in the field. Okay, let's dive into the managed care discussion. Now, before we kick off, I want to warn you, the audio quality isn't the best on this one. It's definitely listenable, but I wouldn't exactly put it in the NPR echelon of quality, so apologies up front. That said, the information is excellent, and you're not going to want to miss it. So with that said, let's go.
Medicare and Medicaid managed care contracts represent a big opportunity for HME provider businesses. However, they also have their own complications and concerns. And coming up, we'll be hosting a webinar on September 5th. Called Managing the Managed Care Opportunity. And presenting that will be Jeff Baird, the chairman of the healthcare group at industry law firm Brown and Fortunato. And I'm talking today with Jeff about that opportunity and sort of some top-level concerns. Jeff, how you doing?
Good. I'm doing fine, David, and I'm excited about presenting this webinar. I always enjoy working with you and your team, and the topic is very timely, so this is going to be fun.
Oh, yeah. I'm excited as well. Jeff, these webinars are always great. So let's dive in. What is the opportunity here? Why are Medicare and Medicaid managed care contracts important in our industry?
Up to just several years ago, most Medicare patients and Medicaid patients, for that matter, were covered by traditional Medicare, traditional Medicaid. And that's where we as a DME company, we take care of the patient and we just bill the Medicare program or bill the Medicaid program. Well, that's changing. Currently, as of today, about 35% of Medicare patients belong to Medicare Advantage plans, and that percentage is increasing. And about 70% of Medicaid patients belong to Medicaid managed care plans, and that percentage is increasing. And essentially, how this works is, well, let's just use Medicare as an example. We'll have, for example, in Texas, we might have Blue Cross Blue Shield, which is an insurance company, go to Medicare and say, hey, listen, we've got this great plan that we can offer for Medicare patients, so therefore, Medicare, let us here at Blue Cross sign a bunch of these folks up under our plan, and then you, Medicare, you pay us, you pay Blue Cross, we will in turn take care of the patients. And these Medicare Advantage plans can offer benefits that traditional Medicare does not offer. And so what's happening is a number of Medicare patients are saying, wow, I think I would like to sign up with Blue Cross or Humana or United Healthcare as opposed to signing up with traditional Medicare. We are seeing the same thing over on the Medicaid side. And so with the sheer number of Medicare-aged people that are signing up under these plans, that are going under these contracts, this presents a huge opportunity for DME suppliers.
Yeah, I was going to say, and we're talking about some pretty big numbers, aren't we? I think 35% of Medicare beneficiaries?
Yes, and that number is increasing. 70% of Medicaid beneficiaries, that number is increasing. And I think that we're going, but I know, we're going to see a large number of Medicare patients that will say, well, instead of me just signing up with traditional Medicare, I think I'm going to sign up with Humana or Blue Cross. And so as a DME supplier, we want to have access to those Medicare patients who have signed up with these Medicare Advantage plans or Medicaid patients who signed up with Medicaid managed care plans.
Wow. It almost sounds like we're on the cusp of seeing this become sort of business as usual.
Well, in fact, it is business as usual. I think it for decades, business as usual was traditional Medicare and traditional Medicaid. Now, business as usual is a combination of traditional Medicare, traditional Medicaid, and now the managed care programs. And so the business as usual now has adopted the Medicare managed care program, the Medicare Advantage programs, and the Medicaid managed care programs.
Gotcha. Now, of course, this isn't to say that Medicare and Medicaid managed care programs are snap. There are some sort of legal concerns, and that's where that's, you know, the meat of this webinar is talking about how providers can properly negotiate these contracts and make sure that they're in a good place with these arrangements. What are some kind of top level concerns?
Well, the first thing is that it is commonly thought of, the general understanding is that Medicare Advantage contracts or Medicaid managed care contracts are take it or leave it, sign it as is, or walk away. Now, there is truth to that. In fact, there's a lot of truth to that, and to an extent, these contracts are take it or leave it, but not totally. There are certain provisions, certain terms that can be negotiated and that the DME supplier needs to focus on. As to how strong or how weak the DME supplier's negotiating position is depends on how important the DME supplier is to that particular Medicare Advantage plan. For example, if the DME supplier is servicing out-of-the-way geographical areas, then that DME supplier is important. If the DME supplier is offering some services or products, specialty services or products that others don't offer, then that, again, strengthens the DME supplier's hand. And so the desire of the insurance company, the one that actually sponsors the plan, to negotiate with the DME company is affected by the strength or weakness of the DME company's position. Having said that, there are a few, and so there are a few key provisions that the DME supplier wants to focus on. I'll give you just a couple of examples. One is, the contract is going to say, most contracts say that you, DME supplier, you have to comply with the terms of this contract, plus you have to comply with all other policies and procedures of the insurance company. Well, the DME company is not going to know what those policies and procedures are. And so what the contract is saying is you have to follow or comply or agree to a bunch of stuff that you've never read. It means, so what the DME supplier is going to want to do is say, fine, I will comply with all this other stuff on condition you first send it to me and I have a chance to read it, and then I have a chance to object. I have a chance to say I don't like that. And so that gives a little bit more flexibility to the DME supplier.
Yeah.
That's important. Another key provision is that many contracts say that you as a DME supplier, if one of the covered lives, that is a person who's covered by the plan, comes to the supplier, then you as a DME supplier, you have no choice but to take assignment. You can't sell anything for cash, or you can't sell a covered item for cash. You have to take assignment. Well, there may be situations where the DME supplier has basically a top-line brand of products that it only provides for cash. And so
okay, yeah.
the DME supplier would like to see that provision modified so as to allow the DME supplier to sell items for cash to the insurance company's covered lives. Those are two examples of what the DME supplier may want to negotiate.
Yeah, and two really important ones. I mean, I just, you know, thinking about the retail, you know, slash cash one, boy, that's, you know, that's practically every provider these days. All right. Well, obviously, this is an important opportunity, and it sounds like there are a lot more concerns that will get detailed in your upcoming webinar. For everybody out there in the audience, that's going to be on September 5th. At 2 p.m. Eastern. And if you want to find out more about the webinar and register for it, go to hme-business.com/webcasts. And it's also on the front page as well. So, Jeff, thank you very much for taking some time out today.
Thanks, David. And I look forward to visiting with you and your readers and everybody else that are going to participate in the webinar. This will be a lot of fun.
Absolutely. And if folks out in the industry want to find out more about Brown & Fortunato, where can they go or what can they call?
Sure. They can, of course, go to our website, www.bf-law.com, or they can just call me at 806-345-6320, and I'll get right. My assistant, Amy, gets all my phone calls, and she rules me with an iron hand, and she'll make sure.
Well, she is terrific, and Jeff, so are you. Really looking forward to this webinar. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot, David. Bye-bye. See you now.
Okay, and again, that's September 5th. The topic is managing the managed care opportunity, and you can find out more at hme-business.com/webcasts. Okay, now let's transition and talk about fleet management when it comes to HME.
HME providers manage a lot of equipment, and keeping track of it can be a Herculean task. But to ignore that task is to risk a considerable amount of inventory investment. Fortunately, there are solutions, and here to talk about one of them is Jim Worrell. Jim is the Chief Commercial Officer for Quality Biomedical. Jim, how you doing? Welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thank you, David. Great to be here.
All right. Thank you very much. Jim, let's dive right into it. Could you describe the dilemma that providers face when it comes to managing their fleet of equipment out there and ensuring that it's getting its regular maintenance and that sort of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. So, of course, the larger the company, the more assets they have. And as the acquisition, you know, the Lincares and the Rotex and the Aerocures of the world acquire more and more companies, there's thousands, literally thousands of assets. And many of them are very important and life-sustaining assets like concentrators or oxygen concentrators and ventilators and cough assist machines and so forth. And so the larger the company, the more problems they have. And a lot of our customers, when we first engage with them, they really don't have a good handle on their equipment service. It's been one of those areas that's been overlooked for a long time. As far as business improvement is concerned, you look at sales and marketing, you look at facilities, you look at administration and regulatory and so forth. But equipment service was just one of those areas that just always got overlooked. And equipment providers really didn't know, what do I have? Where is it? When was it last serviced? How much have I spent on that particular asset? What parts were replaced? When is the PM schedules due? And so forth. So again, it's just been one of those areas that really was overlooked and underserved up until kind of we came into the game.
And while this dilemma is definitely faced by larger providers, it's also faced by, smaller, medium-sized providers as well, correct?
No, absolutely. I mean, anyone that has equipment out on patients has a problem. And, a big part of that expense is not only the expense of the asset itself, but it's the expense of sending a truck out to service that asset or retrieve the asset or swap it out when it goes down or simply when it needs service. So that, again, that's one of those areas that, you know, every time a truck goes out, it's, you know, the number I hear is $75 to $100 just to retrieve an asset. So, yeah, even smaller providers that have, you know, a couple hundred assets, it can be very expensive.
And are there some providers that face this challenge more than others, like by category? I think you mentioned respiratory providers is one of them.
Yeah, I would say that respiratory, enteral, and infusion, you know, any of those types of products that are, again, life-sustaining and expensive and need regular maintenance. So, for example, a ventilator needs to be serviced, or a PM, preventive maintenance, every 10,000 hours. And then in the case of a Trilogy, for example, it's 10,000, and then it's every 17,500 hours, or every 2 years or every 5 years. So keeping track of those schedules and keeping track of the number of hours on a ventilator, really critically important. And that's, you know, our customers have been keeping track of that on spreadsheets and on yellow pads and spiral notebooks and so forth.
Oh, that's
so, yeah, I would say that I would say respiratory in general is one of those areas that, because the equipment is so expensive, you know, a ventilator is $5,000-$10,000 or more. So keeping that equipment up to date is critically important.
Yeah. And when you're mentioning yellow pads, I'm getting a little scared. So how are providers currently handling this situation? Are they really using pad and paper?
Yeah, you'd be surprised at, again, how overlooked this area is. In fact, just last month or so, I was up at visiting a prospect in the Northeast, and this was a fairly large company with a lot of outlets, and we were talking about how they handle service records and when a regulator might walk in. And as I'm sure you and your providers know, JCO or any other regulator can walk in at any time at any facility unannounced and say, show me the service records for, you know, these 5 or 10 assets. And this company showed me, I asked him that question. He said, come with me. And he took me into a storage room, and there was a whole line of filing cabinets, and he opened one up, and there was literally hundreds, and within all the filing cabinets, literally thousands of manila files, manila folders with a piece of paper inside. Each manila file had a serial number on it. And he said, this is how we currently keep track of our serial numbers and of our service records. So if someone were walking into an office in Maine, but the service record was in New York, the main company would have to call New York, who would have to send somebody to that room and retrieve that service record, fax it to the office in Maine so they could show it to the regulator, for example. And surprisingly, that's just one example of how assets are being managed currently.
Man, and besides, you know, audits and inspection, I mean, this is also tied to accreditation as well.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. And if a regulator would walk in and a provider cannot provide those service records, I don't know what the fines are, but I think they're extensive. And of course, you would risk even being shut down if it's a significant problem.
And so let's talk a little bit about your solution. How are you guys bringing order to this chaos?
Yeah, thank you. So we all came out of the IT industry. The leadership team at Quality Biomedical, we're all ex kind of IT guys. And when we looked at this industry and looked at the service space within the HME industry, we saw that it was, you know, pick a number, 10 years, 12 years, 15 years behind the equipment service in the IT industry. And so we really felt that we could make a splash and really make a really disrupt the industry to a large degree. So we immediately formed a small committee of HME providers and dug into the process of how equipment service is managed, from not only service records on when was that asset last service, but the entire continuum of service management. So just getting an RMA, even today, when a provider needs an RMA and they've got to call one of the big OEMs to the big manufacturers. To get an RMA number, they have to make a phone call. They go through voice trees. Sometimes they get voicemail. Then they get a call back an hour later. And just doing something as simple as getting an RMA takes, you know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, and could stretch out over to a half a day or more. So our solution is a cloud-based solution. We call it QConnect for Quality Connect. And it essentially takes all of your assets, puts them into a cloud-based application by serial number, make, model, and serial number, and then allows the provider to get an RMA number in literally a matter of seconds. And when they get the RMA number, it goes to our logistics, hits a, what we call logistics panel, and we have one gentleman who does nothing but organizes trucks to go pick that asset up wherever it may be. And when the asset is picked up and it's scanned into our facility, the system sends an email automatically that the asset has been received. And then the provider can track it all the way through the service process, kind of like watching your car at a car wash, you know, and when it gets washed and waxed and sprayed and rinsed and so forth. So they can actually watch the asset go through triage or go to be assigned to the technician and go to quality control and then to shipping and so forth. So there's no more calling and saying, you know, where's my asset and when is it going to be delivered and so forth. And then all of the service records are maintained online for as long as we service an asset. So for years, you know, so all of the service records for a particular asset are maintained. You simply click on a serial number and you can see exactly what was done to that asset, what parts were used, how much money you've spent on it, when was it last PM'd and so forth. And then finally, from a pure shipping perspective, when we ship a product, the system automatically sends the tracking number. So there's no more calling and saying, hey, you know, what's the tracking number for that particular asset? And then you got to go to UPS and so forth. Everything is done by email and is online. So you can either respond to an email that we send out, or you can go on if you're sitting around on a Thursday night, you know, and you're bored to tears, go into our QConnect panel and approve estimates, which is a really big bottleneck. So all of the estimates are online. You can see exactly what is quoted, what parts are being used, what we suggest is done with that asset, and approve the asset or decline the asset. So everything is everything's done electronically. So it's all in the cloud for easy self-service. And that's really, the 21st century way of doing things is self-service, not waiting for somebody to call you back.
Very true. Well, all right. So, Jim, if readers and listeners of HME Business want to find out more, where can they go?
Yeah, I would suggest go to, you can start at our website, qualitybiomedical.com, of course. And if you want to get an email to me, simply click on Contact Us. That comes to me as the Chief Commercial Officer, as well as customer service. Of course, our phone number's in there. But if anyone wants to reach out to me personally, happy to speak with anybody about how we can help improve the business.
Awesome. And all right. Well, Jim, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the podcast. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's my pleasure, David. Thank you very much for the invite, and all the best to yourself and all of the providers listening.
Thanks again to Jeff Barrett of Brown & Fortunato and Jim Worrell of Quality Biomedical. Remember, Jeff's Managing the Managed Care Opportunity webinar is on September 5th, and that'll teach you all about the critical elements of those relationships as well as negotiating managed care contracts. So that's one you don't want to miss. Again, that's on September 5th, and you can learn more at hme-business.com/webcasts. Okay, that'll close things up for episode 13. Remember, if you want to stay on top of what's happening in the industry, make sure to check out hme-business.com and subscribe to our eSource weekly e-newsletter service. And if you haven't done so, make sure to subscribe to the print magazine there as well. Again, that's hme-business.com. Of course, you can follow us on social media. We're at HME Business on both Facebook and Twitter, and I'm at Post Acute News on Twitter. And of course, there's this podcast. Please, if you haven't already, make sure to click the subscribe button so that you get every new episode. And of course, please rate this one. Remember, you keep listening and we'll keep posting. Lastly, if you have any feedback, suggestions, or requests, don't be afraid to reach out to me via Twitter. I am at Post Acute News there, or you can hit me up on email at dkopf@1105media.com. With that, we'll wrap things up. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye until the next HMEB podcast.